broadcasting from Nashville, Tennessee. This is Keep Asking, the podcast that helps you dig deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. I'm here today with my colleagues Scott McConnell and Casey Oliver today to talk about some research on how churches can be reaching more people. Hey guys, how's it going?
Doing well. Great. Thanks.
So today we're talking about two pretty different batches of research, and we're looking at trends over time. Scott, you want to introduce our first topic for us?
Yeah, Lifeway Research has been measuring American views and church views on racial reconciliation for a number of years. And so by doing so, we have the opportunity to actually compare the same question over time.
Now, when we're taking a look at that, the benefit of looking at it over time, what are we learning, or what's the benefit of those longitudinal studies?
Well, anytime you're dealing with something that's either action-oriented or aspirational, something you want to happen, you start to believe it is happening, whether it is or not.
Okay.
And so it's helpful to actually look and see if there's actually change occurring, or if more people are agreeing with you that thing should happen.
I think to just kind of bounce off that too, sometimes we have a perception that things are changing, and we might look at the snapshot and say, see, a lot of people agree with me, but you might wonder, well, has that always been true? Has there actually been any movement there at all? So I think that's another benefit, is you actually get to see how have things moved, you know, where are we at today as opposed to several years ago?
So we see 93% agree. Oh, and who we're talking about, this was a survey of Protestant pastors. Mm-hmm. And 93% agree that every church should strive to achieve racial diversity. And it was actually a strong 80% strongly agree, 13% somewhat agree. What do we see as that change or development from the last time?
That strong agreement that's at 80% today was at 66% back in 2013. So in just 4 years' time, we see a jump from two out of three pastors to four out of five pastors strongly agreeing that every church should strive to achieve racial diversity. Those are pretty strong statements. We intentionally put some strong words like every and the word should in that statement, so that if people were kind of hedging on it, they wouldn't give a strong agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we're seeing quite a few more pastors really saying, no, every church should be heading that direction.
One of the things that, if we look kind of behind the curtain of research, one of the things that we've seen in some recent projects and recent studies is sometimes the feedback of people who don't like being asked certain questions. Have you noticed, and this is more anecdotal than data, have you noticed any changes in people's reactions to the asking of this question? Are people becoming friendlier to it, more antagonistic?
It's a little hard to tell on a quantitative survey when they're not having opportunities to give open-ended responses. But we do know that, whatever happens to be going on in the news, if there's been a shooting that appears to be racially motivated, if there's political debate going on, then those things are going to be popping into people's minds, even though we didn't even ask about those things on that particular question. And so a given topic that, we ask about 4 years ago, we ask about today, obviously some of those cultural things were going on in at both of those points in time, but we know that those will pop into people's minds just because we're bringing up the broad topic.
Casey, anything with you? And 81% agree that their church is predominantly one racial or ethnic group.
Yeah, and I think that's another one of those things. So we talked about sort of the aspirational. Here's what pastors think we should be striving for, but are we actually there? And then, the answer for a lot of pastors is no, that's not what our church actually looks like. Even 53% of them strongly agreeing that they are predominantly one racial or ethnic group. But at the same time, I think we actually, this is another one of those times where there you see the benefit of looking back, because you can say, okay, I would still not what you might hope or what those pastors might hope, even, you know, in their expressed, you know, opinions. But at the same time, it was 64% strongly agreeing that their church was predominantly one racial or ethnic group in 2013. And just 4 years later, that's down to 53% strongly agreeing with that. So there's definitely movement towards or perceived movement by pastors in terms of the diversity of their churches.
And that doesn't mean that a large number of churches have now reached the threshold of what we call a multi-ethnic church, which means that the largest group is smaller than 80% of the church. But it is a number of pastors that are noticing, you know, we're not all one ethnicity.
One of the things, as you know, we're going to be jumping to another research topic that ties in with this, looking at trends over time. But one of the things that we see as the umbrella for this episode is reaching more people. And the tie we see in this is pastors speaking on racial reconciliation. And so we saw that 63% speak about racial reconciliation several times a year or more, with 9% answering several times a month. And we see that there's an increase or a decrease in those that were speaking about it only once a year or less from the last 3 years. So.
And younger pastors are talking about it more often. 1 out of 5 pastors under the age of 45 are talking about it once a month. And so we expect these trends to continue as churches are responding both to biblical convictions as well as to trends in our culture overall. And, you know, sometimes we want these things to just change overnight. And yet I'm looking back to some questions we asked in 2014, and among all Americans, 3/4 indicated that they agree that we have come so far on racial reconciliation. But actually a few more Americans, 81%, said we've got so far to go on racial relations. And so, you know, some of these changes that we're seeing progress on here within the church are some really long-term type changes that are pretty fundamental to the church that will take some time and still need a lot of effort.
I noticed some of the significant differences surprised me. Well, not surprised me, but they're big jumps. Like you mentioned, the pastors that 45 to 54 age group are much more likely, or I say much, are more likely to answer rarely that they speak on racial reconciliation, whereas only 13% of those in 18 to 44. So that seems like that group seems to be sensing the urgency, or they're just facing it more, or they see it impacting their generation.
You know, the United States has a majority culture, and most churches, actually every church, has a majority culture. And it may be defined by ethnicity. It may be defined by a socioeconomic level. It may be defined by your location in a rural area or an urban area. And yet, too oftentimes, those who are in that majority culture don't realize they are. And I think some of these older pastors, you know, grew up in a day where they didn't notice they were in the majority culture because there were so many of them.
And so
whereas I think younger pastors have been in more diverse settings ethnically, and so it comes a little easier.
Now, Casey, I don't want to call you out in the middle of the podcast. Can
sure.
you? That's not me at all.
Okay.
But I see you over there nodding, and I know you had a lot of opinions on this. what are you itching to say?
Well, I think just even thinking about the connection, yeah, because it was sort of a weird tie-in maybe, as if people heard, hey, we're going to talk about racial reconciliation, and then we're going to talk, I don't know if we said this already, but we're going to talk about technology later. And that seems like very different topics, but, you know, like what Scott was saying about reaching more people, and then, you know, this last question of preaching, you know, that's kind of one practice question. You know, so we hit sort of aspirations, and then where are you at? And then like, well, what are you doing? You know, and so I think it's interesting to sort of see all those different elements of, you know, seeing the pastor's heart towards racial, you know, having a more diverse congregation, and then actually seeing, okay, so then does that play itself out in, you know, in your preaching? So.
from some of our conversations as we transition over, though, I felt like I was going to get to announce the big surprise of our new topic.
I stole your thunder.
Yes, there we go. But so as we talk about pastors' views on technology, it seems to me that in our discussions, we see the racial reconciliation arc being a bit more consistent as opposed to all the changes in technology. I think Casey's big line, and as we were discussing this a week or so ago, we aren't measuring MySpace usage anymore. So there's a limit to the questions you can ask over and over again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the dependency on the context, what is the value, or what are we learning from asking some questions on technology, you know, what the churches actively use?
When there's changes happening rapidly, you need to have surveys conducted more often. People often ask me, you know, when we do a survey, well, how long is that data good for? And it really depends on the topic and how fast things are changing. So for technology, you do need to be looking at it really every couple of years, or things will have moved too fast. And the MySpace example is one of those where, you know, the last time we asked one of these questions was long enough ago that MySpace was still relevant, and today it's not. Mm-hmm. And so with technology, you've got to be asking kind of tracking questions on a more regular basis.
And it's, you know, there's sort of two elements, because one, you want the questions to actually be comparable, so you don't want to be just changing the way you're asking everything and then trying to draw parallels between two questions that are worded entirely differently and are asking about two different behaviors. And so that can be challenging, but at the same time, you don't want to be asking questions that are totally irrelevant either. So, you know, one example I thought of, as we look a lot at the general, what is that, GSS is general
social survey.
We look at their data, and one of the questions they ask is, do you consider yourself a fundamentalist Christian, a moderate Christian, or a liberal Christian? And in my mind, I would be going like, no, to any of those three. That doesn't exactly fit the way I would describe, you know, my faith. And I think there are probably a lot of people that's probably true of. You know, fundamentalist is, they're trying to get at something about conservative theology, but that's not really the way that a lot of people with conservative theology would self-describe. But it is probably 40 years ago the way that a lot of people with conservative theology would self-describe. So in the process of containing, keeping consistency in the way they're asking the question, they're also making it so those options might not be as relevant for some of the respondents. So there's definitely kind of a balancing act to that.
I want to jump to one of the questions on the social media. Which of the following is a goal for your church's use of social media? So feel free to jump back to the main question. But to me, it's interesting that the church's approach, while all of their answers, you know, the most common is to notify and remind people of upcoming activities at 97%, or to interact with conversation at 87%. The actual social elements, or maybe even community building, are the lower. To foster member-to-member interaction is 68%, or to capture the memories of things the church has done, 84%. I think it's kind of interesting, the actual social element of, you know, the organic social interaction is less important than the functional, you know, let's get the word out, let's maybe replacing newsletters or replacing, or, you know, enhancing those kind of things. That stood out to me, that like in other areas, sometimes we sacrifice the community element to get to the execution or the functional element.
Yeah, churches definitely are people-focused organizations, and so it's not surprising that a lot of churches very much emphasize face-to-face people interactions. And so while there's definitely actually a majority of churches are trying to foster member-to-member integration through social media, you know, many of them are opting to try to do that piece face-to-face.
I'm surprised that the use, in 2017, the study, 36% of churches with a website use it to facilitate online giving. And so that is a jump, because in 2010, only 14% offered online giving at all. Does that Does that number still seem low to you all?
I think I was surprised that it continued to be that low. But at the same time, sometimes doing large investments in infrastructure for a church of 50 to 75 people just doesn't make sense.
Right.
And with the majority of churches in that size range, it's not surprising that some churches may never offer something like that when many members can automate their giving just through their bank.
This isn't necessarily me bragging on me, and I may have brought this up before, but when I lived in Georgia and our church started online giving, I was the first person who used it because I was so excited about something that could be automated. And so I have a little bit of a pride issue with that.
Well, so as Lizette's patting herself on the back for being like an early adopter individually, I think that is something we get to sort of see with churches as well, because, as we're going through these trend surveys, we can say, okay, well now it's pretty much almost, what's our actual number here for Facebook currently?
84% of churches utilize Facebook, which happens to be the same percentage that have a website.
Yeah. So as opposed to, you can look at in 2010, you can sort of think back to where Facebook was as an organization and where how churches might be interacting with that. That's 47% of them said that they their church was actively using Facebook. So to see that jump from, okay, this is something that some churches are doing, and maybe they're in that place of being an early adopter, or saying, oh, we see the benefit of this almost immediately. And then you see more and more churches saying, okay, well, we've seen other churches do this and have success with it, so let's use that as a part of our strategy for reaching more people as well.
And the online giving is higher for larger churches. 74% of churches that have 250 folks attending or more offer online giving through their website.
One thing that I just realized, when we talk about, why they're using it, what they're hoping to accomplish, 84% have a Facebook page, 13% have an Instagram account. But when you think about, churches who may be saying they want to reach younger generations, Facebook has been dubbed, well, that's what parents or grandparents use now, or older folks. But then I noticed, just to tell on us, we didn't even ask about Snapchat or some of the others that, may be trending in and out among the young kids, as we would say, and I blame
the
Casey,
youngins. Yep.
The youngins. Mm-hmm. I blame Casey for that. He's supposed to be our window into that world.
Yikes.
But
if I'm our go-to for the window into the Snapchat world, we're never gonna have a good question about that.
But I mean, I think that's just not to tattle on us, and then we can decide to cut that out if it makes it look like we're completely out of touch. But I would expect that number to be much, much lower, mm-hmm. even if we had.
We definitely see that things around us are changing and that churches are changing. In 2010, as Casey said, just 47% of churches had a Facebook page. And honestly, about the same number, 48% expected that a year later they'd be using social media at all. And so to see that 84% have a Facebook page today, they're obviously using social media quite a bit more. We have to step back and say, a couple of years from now, we're going to be doing some things that we may be resistant to, or we may not even be aware of today. And that's just the reality of change. And if we're not open to change of any kind, especially something like technology, that's pretty neutral in terms of, it's neutral on a biblical scale. Is it just useful is the question. And, if we're not open to change, we could definitely be left behind in terms of reaching our community.
And that's actually cool, because we've sort of asked that question as well about where are churches at in terms of how proactive are they in looking for technology that might be helpful. So we had almost a quarter, 23%, proactively look for new technology that may help their church. Another 61% says our church is open to new technology but doesn't go looking for it. And we can compare that against last, 2010 as well, and it's actually a much larger percentage that are saying that they're at least open to new technology. That's 84% versus 73% in 2010 that are at least open to new technology.
When I think of an example, because, you know, I think, I don't know if you all experience this, the older I get, the more I get, oh, now I see why old people don't want to change, because you just got comfortable. But one of the people that we work with a lot that I think of as a great example is Bob Smetana, who, when he first came on board, he still had an AOL account for his personal account. And we gave him immense amount of grief, you know, when we could hear, you know, he's checking at lunch and we could hear, you've got mail coming from his office. But he's someone who's totally embraced Twitter and has a fascinating Twitter feed. And you can, you know, you can learn a lot about what's happening. Bob's a writer on our communications team, but also is well aware of what's happening in religious news around the country and around the world. So his Twitter feed, at Bob Smetana, is a great place just to track and kind of follow along. They'll be prepared. Casey, were you about to give the caveat warning?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I don't have the, I don't follow a lot of religion reporters online or anything like that, but I follow Bob and he retweets just about anything going on in the religion world. So it feels like, you know, by association there, I find out everything happening.
Yeah. And so there's, I think, an example of, you don't have to embrace everything as you find that you're, I mean, I don't want to out Bob's age, but he would not be a millennial, you know, he would be on up there, but someone who has embraced one thing and does it really well. So any other closing thoughts before we wrap up, guys?
I think change will always be with us. And I think, you know, for a church to be reaching their community and in some cases, you know, correcting past wrongs, we have to be proactive about change and really open to and looking for what are the next set of changes we need to be making as a church.
My final thought would be a reminder to me or a reminder to anyone else that when you're seeing the questions, whether you were a part of the survey or you're seeing the results, you know, don't necessarily get mad because the question's asked, but, you know, think about, well, how would you have answered? What does this say about your own context? What can you learn, you know, from how you differ in attitudes or actions to the others who responded? But, you know, take a step back and be willing to learn and grow from these changes, whether it's technology or whether it's the issue of racial reconciliation in your community and church. Casey, any thoughts?
That was good.
All righty. If you have any questions, please tweet to us at S. McCon, at StatsGuyCasey, and at Lizette Beard, or at Lifeway Research. Join us next time for another edition of Keep Asking. Keep asking, learn more, do better.